Imagine how much you'd learn if you could ask your personal heroes anything you want about their life and their secrets to success.
In each episode, we get to do that.
This is the Playground Podcast,
where everyone plays and no day is the same.
Police sirens break the silence of stiff bodies. Yellow tape is stretched and the victims frozen in time. Flashlights break out in search for someone who has the answers. Because somebody does. Somebody always does. Media and the public try to get a piece of all the action, but there's a sign next to the scene that reads, "Nobody enters and nobody leaves." In this podcast, we analyze the nitty-gritty of true crime sensationalized with the media. You'll see that there's a lot to find if you just keep looking. And that the investigation doesn't stop even after the case is closed. This is Risa, and you're listening to Nobody Leaves. Gurcharan Singh, living in Bharari, Delhi, found the Bhatia house door open and all 11 members of their family hanging from the ceiling. The Chindwad family, more commonly known as the Bhatia family by their neighbors, moved to Bharari, Delhi from Tohono, Haryana in the 1990s due to a family property dispute. They moved into a two-story house in Bharari's Sant Nagar neighborhood and started a very successful plywood business, which also led them to eventually open a small grocery store. They resided in this house for approximately 2 decades. During this time, the patriarch of the family, Bhopal Singh, passed away in 2007. And since then, his wife, Narayana Devi, became the eldest member of their household. She had 5 children. Prathibha Bhatia, the eldest, was widowed. Dinesh, the second child and the eldest son of the family, resided in Rajasthan. Bhavnesh, the third child but the eldest son in the household, lived with Narayana Devi and the others. Sujatha, the fourth child and the younger daughter, lived with her husband and children in Panipat, Haryana, while the fifth child and the youngest son was Lalit. The rest of the members of the household and victims of this tragedy were Bhavnesh's wife, Savitha, 48, Lalit's wife, Tina, 42, as well as Prathibha's daughter, Priyanka, Bhavnesh and Lalit's son, Dhruv and Shivam, both 14. So picture this. Their grocery store opens around 5 to 5:30 every morning because that's when the milkman, they're still very common in India, delivers milk to their shop. So at 7 a.m. July 1st, 2018, when one of their neighbors heard someone complaining about not being able to get milk because the shop was closed, it made her wonder what happened. She calls them and no one is picking up the phone. So then one of their other neighbors went to check in on the family. He knocks on the door and realizes that the door isn't locked. Sleeping with your front door open in India is unheard of. So he's obviously concerned and he enters. He climbs up the stairs and that's when he sees an image that would haunt him forever. The police is contacted, but by the time they arrive, the word has spread. There's already a video circling on WhatsApp of 10 family members hanging, like branches of banyan tree, from colorful traditional Indian scarves tied to rods on an iron grill on the ceiling, their mouths gagged, hands tied behind their backs, and blindfolded. All I'll say is this video is still on the internet and it's not too hard to find, so if you choose to search it up, do it at your own risk. Moving on, the police station gets a call at 7:35 a.m. saying there's been a suicide. He goes into the adjacent room and sees the oldest family member, Narayana Devi, on the floor with a belt around her neck. I keep picturing it and it's hard to get out of my head because how does a family with 11 people from as young as 15 to as old as 80 decide to do that? Why would they kill themselves? Could it be a murder disguised as a suicide? According to sources who knew them, there was absolutely nothing unusual about this family. They were all educated, they had two successful businesses, and they seemed to be doing really well. But a mass murder like this couldn't have been the case either, because in order to kill 11 people, including strong young men, would take at least 10 to 15 people and a lot of force. There's no signs of struggle or forced entry, and nothing is stolen. Even if it was suicide, what's the deal with the blindfolds and being in these rows equidistant to each other? What's more peculiar is that they spent the equivalent of $4,810 on throwing an engagement party for Priyanka 10 days before the incident. There's no suicide note or anything that could indicate an outsider was in the house the previous night. So the police had to search meticulously to find anything that would give them an explanation. The autopsy results revealed that Narayana Devi's cause of death was actually strangulation, and there were signs of resistance. She was lying down in the other bedroom on the floor next to the bed, a belt tied around her neck, and the other end of the belt tied to the handle of the closet. The CCTV footage is where it starts to get even weirder. On the 30th of June, they were coming back home carrying buckets, duct tape, and wire. The same ones that were used in the crime scene. As the police try to investigate the crime scene, they start to find fresh ashes and prayer items, indicating the signs of a ritual done the night before, which isn't unusual in Hinduism. Amongst the items used in prayer, they find a diary, the contents of which help them understand a lot of what happened that night. "Hey, find another one," says the policeman. And just like that, they find more throughout the house. 11 in total. 11 diaries filled out over the span of 11 years, leading up to the death of a family of 11 people. The diaries are vigorously written in. The language is instructional, sometimes scolding, but overall pretty conversational. As if somebody's giving them instructions on how to live. There are daily entries in the diary, giving family members a daily routine, solutions to their problems. Every little detail mentioned on the last page of the diaries are the details of everything that happened that night. The details of the incident seem to have been written a week before the incident, containing the instructions of a 7-day ritual they apparently performed, called the Banyan Tree Ritual. It says they're supposed to hang like branches of a banyan tree, and it's supposed to happen at 1 a.m. They have to chant a prayer for 7 days. If someone visits them in the house on a certain day, they can't pray that day. Nothing should be visible to the public. They have to be blindfolded and shouldn't be able to see anything. The mouths should be gagged. The mind should be clear. Nothing but infinity. When you're standing, imagine the branches of the banyan tree wrapping you up, surrounding you. The prayer and the ritual is a chance for them to repent for their mistakes. At the end, the deceased patriarch would come back and help them more, like he did through Lalit. Before 2007, the patriarch of the family, Popal Singh, Narayana Devi's husband, used to make all the decisions and lead the family. However, after the death, a void started to form. Maybe the family lost a sense of purpose and needed something to tie them together. The youngest son, Lalit, was the most mature, despite being the youngest, so he took over the role of the patriarch gradually to fill that void. The other two men were busier and more submissive. Lalit was the one that led the family, for example, planning gatherings, parties, etc. One of the first entries into the diary is of Popal's death. Oddly, the entries focus on what people can do for Lalit. For example, "He is stressed, don't bother him. Stop being mean to his wife, Tina." Lalit would tell his family that his father, Popal Singh, has started visiting him in his dreams and apparently been giving him advice. He would share this advice with the family. Lalit was apparently getting possessed and used to speak and behave like his father. They thought that his father's spirit was helping them through him. They considered it a gift, a blessing. Tina was always supportive of Lalit in everything, blindly. They were like one person. After analyzing and comparing the handwriting with other sources, it is found it is actually Priyanka, Prathibha's daughter's handwriting, who, by the way, was starting to get her master's at this time and doing well for herself too. Lalit had so much control over the family that he could get other people, the women of the family, to make the notes for him. It started with financial advice, and when that worked and the business got successful, the family started to trust Lalit and his advice. They followed his instruction for their business and investments, and because of that, they were able to open another job. Priyanka's engagement as well was received as a reward for their compliance and devotion, which you know is the way religion works a lot of times. You do good things as per God, you get to go to heaven. You follow the word of your deceased patriarch, and you prosper. The young boys were obviously going to question and rebel. It was to an extent that they didn't know the line between faith and delusion was getting blurred. They were also impressionable and thought it was just another religious ritual thing. One of their friends asked them to play one evening, as they regularly do, and the boys said no because they had to do a prayer. Now this just shows that it wasn't seen as something unusual to anyone outside the family. Because of the evidence of resistance, which could be from grabbing tightly on Narayana Devi, could indicate that she wasn't as willing. And the diary said that she had to do it lying down because she's old and heavy. It said to tie the kids' hands extra tight so they get it done and go through with it. We know that the last one to do it was Lalit because his feet weren't tied and hands were tied loosely. There was a promise of their father arriving after this final ritual. That's why the family was complacent, instructed to remain calm no matter what. Keep chanting till the ritual is finished, which was going to be in about 5 to 15 minutes. They had to place a bowl of water outside. The color would change and Bhopal would come back, and that would mean that the ritual was finished. After their dad's passing, a rival plywood shop set their plywood shop on fire while Lalit was inside the shop. He barely survived, but it gave him a lot of trauma and he didn't talk for a year. But one night during their regular prayer time, when he usually would just lips the words with his family, he suddenly started speaking in his father's voice. They thought he was possessed, which is crazy because it's hard to change your voice to mimic someone else's. Some people have that talent, but still, it's difficult. I think that he did do it subconsciously and then started using it to his benefit. There was a debate on whether he was actually undergoing psychosis or not. I think that he definitely was, and he didn't have any malintentions for the family. His trauma from the plywood accident wasn't addressed because of mental health stigma in India. It was layered on, and then the situation got out of hand. They didn't know that they were going to die. They thought they were going to be saved. And then the situation got out of hand. They didn't know they were going to die. They thought they would be saved. I wasn't raised religious, and my dad is, in fact, against the idea of religion, so I might have a unique perspective on this. But obviously, if you tie something around your neck and hang yourself, critical thinking and science will tell you that you are going to die. This was just an unfortunate case of shared psychosis leading to a mass suicide. I think this case did bring a lot of awareness to the fatality of codependent family structures, the importance of individual critical thinking and breaking stigma around mental health, the importance of individual critical thinking, and it helped in breaking the stigma around mental health. It also raises discussions on religion, what it is, where it comes from, and what it's doing to us as a society. It is true, though, that in Hinduism, adding a one to the end of a number makes it auspicious. 11 bodies, 11 diaries, and 11 years since the patriarch's death? Just a coincidence or something more sinister?